Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economic show entitled Money Matters. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show.
And welcome to another edition of Money Matters. Today's edition is show number 235, moving into fall, and money for nothing. Thanks for joining me today. Of course, discussions in this newscast and show are not to be considered as investment advice. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed on today's show are opinions only, my opinions only, and those of the guests and authors that I may quote. They may not necessarily represent those of this station, its staff, management, or underwriters. Money Matters is about money. Is the matters of money affect us all in some way or another? Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it affects our lives. What we do, how we do it. Money Matters is about your money, your lack of it, abundance of it. Money Matters basically is about you. And welcome again to Money Matters edition number 235. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining me today. And the Dow, Dow today, 18,338, 12:11 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, August 4th, 2016, near of our Lord. And make sure to check your day and time if you're listening to this show at another day or time. Market indices may not be accurate at the time that you hear of them, and you may not be able to call in. Show is aired at a variety of radio stations throughout the United States, but most of the time it's recorded and aired at another day. And if you're listening to it live, welcome. The information given will be the most updated. So yeah, the Dow today, 18,335.48, down 19. So it is, looks like it is holding above the 18,000 level. The big numbers, 17,000, 18,000, 19,000, 16,000, those are major support and resistant levels. So it could be said if we dip down below 18,000 again into the 17,000s, might be something to take a look at. But right now we have vaulted over 18,000, been there a couple of weeks or more. Right after the Brexit, in fact, it rocketed up. So kind of a crazy market. If you can't take the volatility, obviously, cash is the way to avoid volatility, as cash doesn't go up or go down, which would include federally insured savings accounts at a bank or CDs or other cash instruments. The more cash you have, the less you'll be susceptible to stock market movements, obviously. And so there you go. More cash is a less volatile way to go. So there has been a lot of talk about the price of gold. So we're going to talk about that today. Gold sitting around $1,365. And the price of gold has moved from a yearly low of around $1,050 an ounce to the mid-1300s, where it is today, $1,365, somewhere around there. Investors are wondering if the lows are in for gold, and if a new gold bull market is upon us. No one can say for sure for certain which way an asset price will go, of course. Opinions vary from one extreme to another. I always said that I can show you 10 articles that'll convince you that the market's going to 30,000. And I could show you 10 more that'll convince you the market is going down to 10,000. So I always sometimes will get an article that I read, or somebody will send me one and say, look, what do you think this guy says the market's running? Or, and then I say, well, I can show you, you know, equal amount of articles that says the market's going down. And each will convince you one way or the other. So there are different opinions. And that's the beauty and the heartache about stock markets and asset prices in general. You just don't know. Nobody knows. Nobody can accurately predict or forecast which way the market will go. Larry Edelson of Money and Markets, in his July 13th, 2016 article entitled Caution Gold and Silver Miners, Larry makes the case that a correction may be coming in gold, and the only way that might change is if gold were to close above 1404.50 at the end of a month. He also states that gold can't even get through the major support level of 1368, where it happens to be very close today, so we'll see what happens there. Mr. Edelson, in his article, shows an ominous-looking chart with forward-looking plots that shows gold making a drastic pullback into this fall, some around October. Now, keep in mind the forward plot is an estimation and fabricated by Mr. Edelson. He does supply backward-looking data showing his previous methodology, and he shows the actual gold price plotted against his methodology. And that particular chart could give some validity to his argument. Remember, the past performance never guarantees future price movements, but history can be a guide to a particular tendency if it reoccurs enough times. Gold certainly has made something of an aggressive move in the last weeks, a few months, and the reason is thought to be aggressive monetary policy by a variety of central banks around the world. Your friends, the central banks of the world, of course. When I say aggressive policy, that includes low, zero, or even negative interest rates. There's been more talk about negative interest rates. We've talked about it before. Negative interest rates is where you lend particular institutions some money and they pay you back less than what you lent. That's a negative interest rate. Aggressive policy also includes quantitative easing. Some analysts call this money printing. Aggressive policy includes what they call asset purchases, where central banks will buy a variety of debt from institutions, both private and government institutions, and the old buzzword stimulus. Stimulus is in the form of either a check that they mail out to you, aggressive social programs, and government spending, such as infrastructure and public transportation and that. The thinking that these aggressive policies, as they are named, as these aggressive policies are undertaken, they require more money to be spent, and the government will conjure up or borrow that money to fund these policies. This, in turn, is thought in monetary theory, economic theory, the more money that is borrowed or the more money that is conjured up or printed will weaken the currency in question. We know that weakened currency also has another name called inflation. When you weaken a currency, it takes more of that currency to buy a particular asset priced in that currency, and we call that inflation. The opposite of that is deflation. Deflation, that is when prices drop. That's when the prices of things you buy drop. Don't you wish that would happen, huh? Well, it has. Price of gas has come down, right? You've seen that. Natural gas has come down. You've seen that. Oil, et cetera, et cetera. So we have seen some deflation in some assets around the world. When we do have massive inflation, of course, or a devaluing currency, inflation, the result of that, it is thought that more investors would purchase gold. 2, protect buying power as paper currencies erode in value. Historically, that has happened before. People will buy gold because they see massive inflation. And if you remember in the early 80s, 1980, 81, somewhere around there, we had pretty bad inflation. Bonds were playing 14, 15, 16, 17%. And gold did spike tremendously up to about 900 before it came crashing down. Now remember, sharp spikes in asset prices can just as easily be followed by equally sharp corrections. So whether Edelson's prognostication of a fall of gold into the fall of this year will be true only remains to be seen. We'll see if he's proven right or not. Remember, previously I spoke that Mr. Edelson pegs two major resistance points. One is the first resistance point of 1368 an ounce that we could probably look at any day now, whether it can go over that. And then a monthly close at the end of a month of over 1404. He says if that does not happen, we could see a correction coming. So we'll see what happens there. And in the let's try it again, even though it hasn't worked, we get news out of Japan. I just got back from a trip in Japan. What a fascinating country that is. They have some incredible things there. You wonder how they lost the war. But I've been sharing that on the Money Matters newsletter. Money Matters newsletter is just a no-cost newsletter of which I print out and send to you by email a variety of market news and objective market analysis, and I even share some things about travels and jokes and all sorts of crazy things. I don't do anything with your email. You won't get any spam. I don't send any spam. I don't send the email list to anyone. It just comes to me. And it's our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station, a no-cost economic newsletter that can be had at moneymanagementradio.com. Comments and questions on the show can be sent to the program director at your community radio station, of course, and they will forward it on to me. But before we talk about the economic and monetary policies and, well, some say madness that Japan is undertaking. Yeah, this was an amazing country that I visited, Japan. Mystical, I would say. And like any other nation, they develop, you know, a nation develops its own special wants and must-haves according to what the people see around them and what's new and in fashion and in vogue. And so I've been sharing in the newsletter some of the amazing things that I saw. One of the things I did see in Japan, of course, Japan is an island nation. A lot of it is mountainous. So they're all crammed together very tightly, and I'm sure you can imagine what Tokyo looks like or the subway, which is very jammed. One of the things they have a fascination with is small pets, dogs and cats, especially small dogs, due to the consideration of millions of people jammed together on a small island. And the fact that they pack themselves into very expensive, very small apartments and houses in a lot of places, they can't afford the luxury of owning a large dog or large pet. Hence their fascination and status affiliation with a small in size animal. But I'll tell you, they have these little shops, these little cat and dog shops. And you go in there, they look humane. I don't know if they are, but they look humane. But they have some crazy, crazy breeds of these animals. I mean, these are the cutest dogs and cats you've ever seen. I mean, I came in there, I thought a lot of them were stuffed. I mean, they were that cute. The so cute category. Anyway, they have these small dogs and small cats, and they are expensive. $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a dog. But you take a look at these things, it's like, wow, that's the cutest animal I've ever seen. That's the cutest animal I can ever imagine. So the newsletter has some of those photographs. But boy, they are really something else. Wow, get your wallet out for sure. You've also heard about the Japanese tea ceremony. That's a celebrated and ancient ritual, and it's not just going somewhere and having tea. No, you go to the tea ceremony, and there's a tea master, and you sit down, and if anybody gets quiet, and in walks the tea master, and she goes through the ritual of introducing herself and bowing and sitting down, and they prepare the tea and the utensils and the cups that you use in a very ancient ritual-type fashion. Takes a while and is steeped in ancient customs and ritual. Forgive the pun. Took about 20-30 minutes to go through the whole thing and know how to hold the teacup and rotate the teacup and sip the tea and everything. So that's the tea ceremony. I have some photographs of that as well in the newsletter. We went to an amusement park, and I will tell you that the Japanese systems for running things are amazing. The way they run the trains and the buses and the cabs and everything is incredible. No matter how packed a place is, the lines move very quickly. Everybody's extremely cordial and just amazing the way they do things. However, they do not know how to run an amusement park. The bathrooms are extremely clean everywhere. In the airports, amazingly clean. Even in the amusement parks, just totally, a Hewitt, as they would say. But the amusement parks, they don't know how to run those. Let me tell you why. The amusement park that I went to had three world record roller coasters. These are massive structures. The one had the highest roller coaster they had there, the one with the most turns, and the ones with the steepest drop. And the steepest drop one was an inverted drop. So you drop steeply, and then it actually went up and underneath. So we rode two of those roller coasters. It was rained out on the third. Roller coaster started to rain. We hit it late in the day. That was a mistake. But what happens is there's like 60 people in line. And I'm used to Disneyland, you know, where there's 600 people in line and you wait an hour. Well, there were 60 people in line and they said, you wait an hour. And I said, well, wait a minute. I'm almost at the entrance. How come it took an hour? I found out why it took an hour. They, on all the roller coasters, they have lockers so you can lock your stuff up. But what they do is they actually give you a key. So you when you get to the roller coaster loading area, you get in the car, but then you walk through the roller coaster and get out again on the other side. Then you go to a locker, you lock your stuff up and you get your key, and then you get back in the roller coaster, and then they take a long time to prepare you, and then they tell a story and all this stuff, and then they finally let you go. So the fact that you have to get in the car and get back out again, and some people aren't as mobile, it just takes forever. It takes forever. They must take 10 minutes to load a car. So you get six car loads, and the cars are not really long either. They don't hold a lot of people comparatively to what I've seen here. So it took a long time, and we were there on an off season. So I can imagine if there's 200 people in line, you're going to wait 2 hours. So I have some photos of the world record roller coasters in there as well. The spelling on the signs in English, they're cute. Sometimes they misspell it. They spelled fried food F-R-I-D-E, F-R-I-D-E. I thought that was cute, so I took some pictures of how they misspelled, and sometimes their wording isn't right. You know, you would think you go to an amusement park or somewhere, and they have English translated. Anybody that speaks any kind of natural native English could read that sentence and correct it. You know, but I guess they just have Japanese people that translate and do the best they can. You know, I was thinking, boy, you got a great business in here just being American that speaks English. And just go around to everybody that has printed English and say, you know, for $100, I'll correct all your English, because it's just really silly the way they do it. But it is cute. As cute as their dogs. We also went to a driving range, golf. You know, Japanese are big into golf and baseball. But they have a limited space. So the driving ranges are usually netted facilities that only go about 200 yards. And they're very narrow. They might be only, you know, a block, half a block wide. So they're all covered with nets. But they're really cool. It took us a half hour to check in due to a language problem and the way they do things. But they have usually multi-levels, very clean. And they had all the balls are teed up for you. So they have little balls that pop up out of the ground so you don't got to bend over all the time and put the ball on. They also have in the upper levels, instead of popping up out of the ground, they have a little arm that comes down and places it on the tee for you. So that's interesting. They also have little containers of hot and cold towels. Those are included in your fees. So you get a little hot. Boy, it was hot when I was there. You can get a cold towel and wipe off. Or if it's cold or you feel like washing the dirt off, you can grab a hot towel. So it is rather fun, and I have some photographs and things on the website about that. We went to the Japanese spa. You heard about that. That was kind of interesting. In the spas we went to two, you stay overnight, and they give you a kimono, two kimonos when you check in, and you wear the kimono the whole stay. So you eat dinner in the kimono, and they provide you dinner, and you walk around the hotel in the kimono. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. You feel like you're really into this thing. And the spa, they have men's spa and women's spa. And you go in there and you take clothes off, And then you go into the Nikki area, the Nikki area. And they have a bunch of sinks with all sorts of washing soaps and all sorts of crazy liniments and everything. And you wash yourself down with a bucket. And you sit in a little stool and you wash yourself. And then you rinse yourself and you soap up and you wash yourself and you rinse yourself. You do that half hour or so or whatever. And then you get into the spa, natural spa, and you float around in there. And they got two or three. And sometimes if you're lucky, they'll have a cold spa. Then when you're done, you rinse off again, and then you go into the dressing area. And the dressing area looks like a movie star green room where you go in and you have a mirror and they have razors and brushes and combs and all sorts of great things to, you know, deodorant. And you know, there must be probably 15 to 16 bottles of stuff at the dressing area. So the whole spa ritual takes about an hour and a half, 2 hours if you really take your time, and you come out feeling like $1 million. It's great. So they're fine. And then finally, you know, I noticed that all the servant people, you know, the waitresses and the taxi cab drivers and the bus drivers and the police and the people that clean the restaurants and clean the trains, and everybody was dressed in impeccable uniforms. All the uniforms were all the same and beautiful. You know, the police wore white gloves and the taxi cab drivers wore white gloves and waitresses, and everybody was really, really impeccable. So it was really interesting. This country, because Japan is very clean and has its act together, I had a great time. And thanks for allowing me to share that with you. Anyway, we'll be right back with Money Matters, talk a little bit more about money and the Japanese policies that, well, some could be said, repeating insanity. Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. The 5% appear too small. Be thankful I don't take it all. And you're tuned to Money Matters, your economic forum on your community radio station. Thanks for joining me today. My name's Mark Cunaberdy. So we talked about my visit to Japan, and there is a definition that says, you know, insanity is the repeating of a particular pattern or repeating of a particular act over and over and expecting a different result. One could say that the Japanese are approaching the moment of insanity. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe said on about 2.5 weeks ago, according to CNBC, published on Reuters News on July 27th, 2016, that his government would compile yet again another stimulus package to try to pull his country out of the repeating recessions and economic stagnation that they've seen since their stock market blew up right around 1989. So that's what, 28 years of muddle-through economics? This package will contain $265 billion to reflate the flagging economy, according to the Reuters News article. Although it is unclear, says Reuters, how much will be spent directly to boost growth. The premier's 28 trillion yen, which is 265.30 billion, stimulus package, which exceeds initial estimates, which were around 20 trillion, includes 13 trillion yen in, quote, fiscal measures. These measures are likely to include spending by national and local governments as well as loan programs. Abe's announcement via speech in southern Japan puts pressure on the BOJ, the Bank of Japan, to match his big spending plan with additional monetary easing, which took place that week. Hiroshi Miyazaki, senior economist at Mitsubishi UFJ Morgan Stanley Securities, says, quote, the amount is so large that the stimulus package is bound to have a big economic impact. It is impossible to spend this much money in one extra budget, so this may take place over the next few years. Again, from Hiroshi Miyazaki. He goes on to say the Bank of Japan is likely to ease policy, including increasing government debt purchases. That's asset purchases we spoke of a little bit earlier in the show. So you could say that the Bank of Japan can, quote, absorb the new debt. It also makes it easier to show that the Bank of Japan and the government are working together in this island nation. The package will be presented to the government officials next week, Abe was quoted as saying. Many central bank policymakers prefer, so says the Reuters article, to put off taking action as they expect the anticipated fiscal stimulus package of Japan to boost growth as it sits, and they were going to delay implementing another sales tax hike. They had one, didn't go over so well, according to the article, and they were going to do another, but they're going to delay that sales tax hike. They also have a similar inflation target in Japan, similar to the inflation target we have here of 2%. Measured by the particular government in question. Keep in mind that if you have 2% inflation, the value of your money will be cut in half in 36 years. The value of your money with 2% inflation mathematically works out to cut your purchasing power in half in 36 years. So if you saved $1 million for your retirement, and you lived 36 years at 2% inflation, you'd be able to buy half as much. However, the article goes on to say that the moves in the Japanese currency, the yen, and other political considerations could be decisive factors for the Bank of Japan, whether they actually expand stimulus more or save their ammo, my word there, they call it dwindling policy resources in the article, for when the economy takes a turn for the worse. That caused the dollar, the U.S. dollar, to rise 1.8% versus the yen, as investors speculated about when Shinzo Abe would announce the actual package. Nikkei share averages rose 1.7% in response in hopes for this more stimulus for boosting stock prices. Shinzo Abe ordered his government earlier in the month to craft a stimulus plan to revive an economy dogged by, quote, sluggish consumption, despite 3 years of Abenomics, which has been a mix of hyper easy monetary policy, big spending, and promise reforms. So this stimulus and these fiscal policies and monetary policies by the central banks affecting the currencies, fiscal being governmental spending policies or debt policies, that's the difference between those two, They have tried this over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And here we are, and they're going to try it more. Of course, if first does not succeed, try again. And it's still, according to their own admission, sluggish consumption. And despite 3 years of Abenomics, but they've doing other stimulus packages since the economy went into the tank in 89, 90 with the stock market crash. Sources told the Reuters news service that the package will have a headline figure of at least 20 trillion yen. 20 trillion, that's a quarter of a trillion dollars. But only about 3 trillion yen would come from direct spending by national and local governments. The rest would be comprised of loan programs and subsidies to inflate it to the entire amount. Insanity, it's hard to tell. You know, they've tried this over and over, and indeed, central banks everywhere have tried this over and over and over. And, you know, when I went to Japan, I was amazed about how much stuff was for sale and how many people were buying things. You know, I kept looking around going, I don't see a recession here. This is amazing. I mean, they got so much stuff for sale, floors and floors and stores and stores, blocks and blocks of stuff crammed into stores for sale. It was amazing. It's absolutely amazing. I think most of the stores I went to, for me, were like going into a big box store here, like a Costco or something, and seeing all those crowds. All the stores that I saw were mostly like that. It was an incredible consumption that I saw. So I'm not quite sure where they're getting this sluggish economy, but it must have been really booming prior to that. So in any case, you're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll go over one more time what negative interest rates are. I get asked about that a lot when I'm walking around town, so I'm going to zip on that in just a minute. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. Thanks for listening. Keep tuned. We'll have some more news in just a bit. My name's Mark Cuniberti, your host of Money Matters. And we're in the money. We're in the money. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. My name's Mark Cuniberti, your host for today's show. So, yeah, we've gotten a lot of questions on negative interest rates. And I've explained it many, many times. Still, people ask me. I don't get it. What's a negative interest rate? Well, you know, a negative negative interest rates, also known as negative yield. So, you know, we try to keep things simple on this show. So a lot of people come to me and say, I love your show or I love your articles that you write in newspapers. And my first question is not whether you liked it or not. You know, I don't really care whether you liked it or not. I do. I'm like everybody else. I like you to like my stuff. But my main question is, did you understand it? Because economics, in my opinion, you know, are boring. You know, boring. Everybody says, I took economics in college. It was boring. And I listen to many economic radio programs, TV programs, the same ones you listen to, familiar names. I read a lot of economic articles in the newspapers, and a lot of them are boring, or they give you information that's really not helpful. I mean, they say GDP rose and inflation, oh, and then the bond yields went down, and, you know, most people are like, what? Well, you know, no wonder people click it off. So we try to make it so you can understand it, and that's the main thing. My main question is, did you understand it? Because you have to understand economics. I know that it's kind of boring, but really, money does make the world go round. Whether you have a lot of it or a little of it, I mean, it affects you. It affects everything you do. And I always say that, you know, the bird flu or an economic, or an atomic warhead going off somewhere, or major war or tsunami won't destroy a country. Historically, you know, maybe outside of Pompeii, that was wiped out because of a volcano. I mean, the only thing that destroys countries entirely, governments, is economic malaise. When the economy goes down and actually self-destructs, that'll destroy a country. It's the only thing, in my opinion, that can destroy a country. So that's why it's important. I know it may be boring. We try to make it interesting. But it's the only thing that can really actually cause major upheaval, you know, with the guns to come out and everything. I mean, it can really be bad. Obviously, an atomic warhead going off is not a pleasant experience, but look at Japan. They had two go off, and then you go back to the country, what, 50 or 60 years later? Amazing. Amazing. Rebuild even better than before. So one of the topics, just fairly new, too, this is a fairly new concept, is negative interest rates, also known as negative yield. So what is that? You know, how can that be? Traditionally, interest rates are what we call usury rates. When people lend their money, we have a pretty good idea of what a traditional usury rate, interest rates are. All the way back, you know, Roman times, you know, it's usually around 4, 5, 6%. That's normal. People lend their money, they want 5, 6%. And traditionally, that's what interest rates have always been. Well, of course, now we've been down to zero interest rates for the last, what, 10 years here, say 8 years here in Japan. They've been down in the dirt for a long period of time. I think we started to approach zero rates, you know, after the 2001 dot-com crash. Greenspan drove them to zero, so what, that's 14, 15 years. So they only go to zero, and I was, you know, but it was always taught you can't go lower than zero. Yes, it can. What's lower than zero? Negative rates. So negative yield, negative interest rates are basically, you know, they've been all the rage recently on the world economic stage. And there's $10 trillion. That's not small potatoes, folks. $10 trillion worth of sovereign bonds, which is government debt. Okay, when you hear the word debt, you hear the word bond, or you hear the word IOU, it's all the same. Bond is an IOU. It's a fancy name for it. Sovereign means it's government or country. Okay, there's $10 trillion worth of sovereign bonds yielding less than zero, out from Bloomberg News. So what does it mean, yielding less than zero? Well, if you had a bond that yielded 1%, then when you got your money back, you'd be paid 1% usually annually. Okay? So when they say, well, this 10-year bond pays 1%, you get 1% a year. Okay? So negative interest rates are not zero. They're actually minus. So if you give somebody $100 and the yield is negative 1%, if you give somebody $100, you get negative 1% taken out of it annually. So you loan your money, but you get back less than what you loaned. Now, why would anybody do that? And it's like, well, why would anybody do that? Well, when I was growing up and I went to the local bank, J. Paul Genie Bank, which is Bank of America, they would pay me 6%. That was, you know, when I was growing up, I think it was 1960, 61, 62, I became aware at 5, 6, 7 years old. And I was aware, my dad would say, put your money in the bank for 6%. At that time, my dad put money in the bank for the interest. And that's what my dad did. He put money in the bank for interest, for the 6%. My question would be, do we put money in the bank today for interest? No. Why do we do it? For safety. For safety. I don't want to be in the stock market. I'll be in the bank. At least I know I'll get my money back. So, first off, what we learn from this example is the reason we use a bank today is not for the interest, where it used to be. It used to be, as Mike Tyson used to say, after he was going through many, many boxing matches and his brain got kind of scrambled, I used to be's. He says, I ain't as good as I used to be's. Anyway, so the I don't know why I said that. There's supposed to be humor involved here. Alternative economic comedy mixed in. Alternative economic news mixed in with comedy. What's not to like? I was told by a program director once. So in any case. So the reason we put money in a bank today has changed. It has changed. We used to do it for the interest, but now we do it for safety. So when somebody comes to me and says, Mark, I don't want to put money in the bank. I don't get any interest. I always respond by, that's not why we are there. We are not there in the bank for interest. We are there for safety. So when somebody goes to the bank and gives them money and you get back less than what you paid, you do it because you perceive that the safety offered by the bank is worth the minus 1%. Or whatever the percentage is, you're going to lose for the safety, right? Because in a bank, you are FDIC insured, right? Or credit union insured, National Credit Union Association insured by the government if you're in a credit union. So you don't want to keep $100,000 at home. Somebody would hold you up. So you put it in the bank. So the bank could say, well, to keep that money safe, we're going to charge you. Now, so far, as far as I'm aware, we haven't seen retail negative interest rates. Retail negative interest rates is when the consumer, you, get charged negative interest rates. We only are seeing it in large depository asset issuers. Like when a hedge fund sells $500 million worth of stock, they can't go to the bank and put the money in a savings account because the FDIC only covers $250,000. And they can't keep the money in the basement. $500 million, a lot of cash to keep around. So they park it somewhere. And they usually park it, they can park it in U.S. treasuries, which are what? IOUs from the U.S. government. Or if you're in another country, maybe German bonds, which are IOUs from the government, or European bonds, or whatever it is. Switzerland's bonds, or Swiss bonds, or Danish, or whatever you park it in. Because although it's not insured, it's guaranteed by the government behind it. So they perceive that as the closest thing as they can get. You know, if I'm going to be lending my money to Germany's government, it's not in a savings account, but the German government is perceived won't default. Or if I give my money to the U.S. government in the form of treasuries to get a treasury back as an IOU documentation, I give them money and I get a treasury back, we assume that the U.S. government won't default. So although it's not FDIC insured, it's still insured by the same entity, which is the government. So when these big hedge funds sell a lot, big chunks of money, they can't put it in a savings account because it's only insured at 250. So they buy treasuries with it or they buy other foreign bonds with it. Well, right now, like I mentioned earlier, there's $10 trillion worth of sovereign bonds that investors are buying for yields less than zero. Now, I haven't seen a 1% negative yield. It's usually 0.01% or even less than that. But it is negative nonetheless. We haven't seen it on the retail level. Is it coming? I don't know. But this is spreading. This negative interest rate, this negative yield is spreading. And so we have to watch to see if it will come to the retail level. Or many analysts are saying it is coming. You put your money in a savings account, then the bank would basically pay you back less when you took it out. They'd charge you to park the money, much like a depository service. Remember, government bonds are considered one of the safest investments due to the fact that the governments of the most, for the most part, can't go broke. And if it's an individual government that doesn't participate in a common currency like countries of the euro currency, let's say you have an individual government that doesn't participate in a common currency, the U.S. doesn't participate in a common currency, we just use ours. Those types of loans, those types of assets that you're loaning your money and getting back a treasury for is regarded as the safest place on the planet. Therefore, because governments are thought not to default on their debts, although it has happened with, you know, Argentina and Greece. And so one just has to look at the many bailouts that we've provided, the central banks have provided an IMF to Greece and to Puerto Rico, to assume that maybe these countries won't go broke, because even if they do go broke, you'll have a central bank back them up. As interest rates remain at historic lows in many parts of the world, and the demand for safe havens like sovereign debt skyrockets, many governments have found themselves able to borrow money at the favorable rates of negative yield. After all, what better way to make money than to loan it out? Because the more you loan out, the more money you make, because you take a little piece of everything you loan out. Of everything you take in, obviously. People loan you money, and you take a piece, and you give it back. You don't give it back as much, so you can make money. Theoretically, the more government borrows, the more money they can make. I will conclude by saying what a crazy world we live in. And in my opinion, it is because all that money that central bankers have printed up to try and save the economies and the governments of the world, all that money they've printed up to do these things, is sloshing around the globe looking for a home, and they've got to put it somewhere. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. You have been listening to show number 235, Money for Nothing, and Into Fall We Go. I'd like you to keep in mind that the views expressed on this station are my opinions only. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Advisors, Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. There we go. The views expressed are my opinions only, and those of the authors that I've read and the news articles, and may not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this community radio station, its staff, management, underwriters, nor anyone else. The show is not to be construed as investment advice. Consult a qualified investment professional before making any investment decisions. I want to thank you for listening. You can get our no-cost newsletter, our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station, at the website moneymanagementradio.com. You may also send any comments or questions about the show to the program director at your community radio station. My name is Mark Cuniberti. God bless. Thanks for joining me today.
This has been another edition of Money Matters. Please be advised that the views and opinions expressed on this show are those of myself and my guests, and are opinions only, and may not represent those of this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. This show is not meant as investment advice. Consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions, and do your own research before investing. The information given on the show was obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing, but is not guaranteed. This show was pre-recorded at an earlier date, so the market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at the time of airing. You can order past shows or comment on our show by sending me an email at mark@moneymanagementradio.com. Money Matters is produced and recorded at the studios of KVMR FM 89.5 in Nevada City, California. You can visit our website at moneymanagementradio.com. Thanks for listening.